The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave. Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes and at nfl.com/Shek. Yes, welcome to the show. It's an exciting day here in Studio 66. He won't be here in person, but just the same, it's always a fun DDFP whenever we get our main man, A.J. Hawk of the Green Bay Packers, on the line. We'll be doing that momentarily. In the meantime, much to discuss in the world of football and in the game called life with the man seated directly across from me here in Studio 66. You know his work on NFL Network and NFL.com right now. In fact, you can go to NFL.com and read his piece ranking the five greatest Super Bowl era dynasties of all time. And that man is, of course, Elliot Harrison. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, did I make the top five DDFP guess? Did I at least make the top five? Remember when you had that little contest? I didn't make it.
Nope, you didn't. Oh, well, we did do our favorite non-football playing guest. Yeah, you were in the mix for that, come to think of it. Yeah,
no. Didn't I get beat by Handsome?
Handsome Hank won the that was, I think that was a listener voted poll too. So that makes it extra painful. It wasn't me just callously making a call to hurt feelings. No, this was the fan base, the Czech Republic weighing in there. Also, I failed to mention, because I'm not sure if he's going to walk through the door here, after we hang up with A.J. Hawk, a Cowboys legend, that's exciting stuff for you, E.H., as a Dallas Cowboys fan, Nate Newton may or may not walk in here. Maybe we'll play a little Hall or Nothing with him, one of our favorite games. We ask about current and recently retired NFLers and whether or not they're worthy of a gold jacket. Always a fun game to play.
Well, so I defer to you on that. Is Nate Newton a Hall of Famer?
He's a guard. I don't know. How many guards are in the Hall of Fame?
It's not a glamorous position. It's kind of like safety. It's definitely one of those ones that's tough. I mean, Will Shields waited forever with 12 Pro Bowls.
Here's the thing with guards, and as I've said a million times before, now get ready to hear it for the million and first. This thing of offensive lineman evaluation, no one can do it, not even NFL football players, unless they play on the line of scrimmage. I've asked a lot of football players, hey, do you really know who's good and who's bad as an offensive lineman? They say, nah, not really, unless we're focusing on it in the tape room and really breaking it down and looking at missed blocks. So how could these 58-year-old curmudgeons that do the voting for the Hall of Fame, how would they have any actual opinion? It's just based on word of mouth getting passed down. It's reputation-based. So I don't want to say it to his face, but I will if you force me to. I bet Nate Newton's not going to the Hall of Fame. I don't know. Will he?
I don't think he's going to go to the Hall of Fame. But, the cool thing about Nate Newton is the USFL
reject. But he played with a lot of Hall of Famers, so that means he knows something about it.
Well, so would you say the same thing about Larry Allen? Like, did you, even as a casual fan at some point,
Only because John Madden and people like that constantly were, using the telestrator to circle him and watch what he does right here. Look how he gets up there and I say, that's a football player right there. Only with that sort of focus, being forced with my eyeballs to observe these things, could I discern who's doing it well. But I don't know.
All right. Well, let me just say this about Nate, okay?
I think Alan Faneca is going to go to the Hall of Fame.
I don't think he will. I think he's a great player. I think he's deserving. I just don't think he's going to have the juice. If Will Shields can't go with 12 Pro Bowls, how is Alan Faneca going to do it?
Because I'll tell you why. Because I think it has a lot to do with reputation, and there's a story about Alan Faneca and the way that he could pull from his position. There's a lot of highlight. As much as a guard's play can be highlighted, there's a lot of evidence to look at on tape of him, and whoever is making the case for Alan Faneca will have heaps of that listen, here's what it will come down to. People always argue about Lynn Swann shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Well, look, we've seen ad nauseum, including the media guys who vote on these things, have seen his big plays in the big games all the time. That influences whether you like it or not. It's going to influence it. Similarly, Alan Faneca made the key block in Super Bowl 40 against the Seahawks. He springs fast Willie Parker, literally doesn't get touched on the decisive play, like I say, of that Super Bowl. It springs Parker, he gets the touchdown, and the Seahawks never really get that close to Pittsburgh again. That will be the first play you look at. That counts in the brains of these voters.
He was certainly better than Flozo Adams was in a Pittsburgh uniform, but let me just say this about...
Flozo wasn't that bad.
No, actually he wasn't. I'll tell you what about Nate, though, that's something you can get behind. Nate Newton was a USFL reject. He played with the Tampa Bay Bandits, and which I think is the team Brian Sipe played for, but I'll have to look that up.
No, Sipe played for the Generals with Herschel Walker.
You sure about that? I thought that was Doug Flutie.
And
Sipe played with the Bandits.
I don't think he played with the Bandits. Let's see if somebody can look that up.
I know Gary Anderson played with the Bandits, the running back for the Chargers.
Who somersaulted into the end zone once in the Chargers uniform.
So Nate was a USFL reject. The Redskins just cut him. Never even played a game for him. So when he was a rookie with Dallas in 1986, he didn't play at all for Tom Landry, and he was already 25 years old. He finally became a full-time starter in 88 at 27. He made his first Pro Bowl in 1992 at 31 years old. He made six Pro Bowls and won three Super Bowl rings all in his 30s.
Is that right?
All in his 30s. Right. He made his last Pro Bowl at 37 years old.
All right. Well, that's an interesting thing. I didn't know that I guess I didn't remember that he started his career in the USFL.
That's right. He's one of those rejects. He kind of reminds me a lot of John Riggins, one of those guys whose career didn't take off until after he hit 30 years old.
All right, EH. We'll kibitz more on this one in a little bit. We have much to discuss. Like, I don't know if you heard, we're coming at you on Thursday right now. David Letterman's hanging it up in 2015. He's the best of the best. He's the best there ever was. I was a child in Pittsburgh, PA, setting the VHS to record overnight. I'd wake up and there'd always be a new Letterman for me. I obsessively watched it. This is, of course, at that age, I decided what would be better than working on a late night show. I got to do that on the Kimmel show. Now I get the kibitz about football here at the NFL. I'm a lucky fella, EH. Never luckier than when I get to talk with our main man all the way from Green Bay. Man who should have been spent his January, or at least part of it, in Hawaii playing in the Pro Bowl. No justice there, but he was named our favorite guest, football playing guest of 2013 with the Shecky Award. It's AJ Hawk. What's the poop, fella?
Damn it, safe. Good to be back.
Yes.
Been a while.
I know. Too long. What gives? What are you doing with your off season, fella?
Oh, I'm just staying busy. I'm actually in Ohio right now until our off season stuff starts up for good here in a couple weeks in Green Bay. So back in Ohio, traveling around, going to some weddings, officiating some weddings, just hanging out with my kids, man.
Wait a second. Officiating? What are you? You have the deal where you're allowed to, or you're ordained or whatever and allowed to?
Of course, man. I've been ordained since 2010, but I just finally got my first real gig in Kansas City, Missouri a couple weeks ago.
Somebody famous?
No. Well, maybe he's my good buddy from Green Bay. Does that count?
What, is he a player or no?
No, not a player. No, he's a my boy Nate. He works for the team as a trainer, but yeah, did his wedding. He married a great girl, and he asked me about a year ago to do the wedding, and I prepared, and I think it all went off pretty well.
This is great stuff. I love the idea of AJ Hawk marrying people out there. Do you do anything that distinguishes you from the crowd? If you're doing that, do you have to give like a sermon or a little speech at the end?
Oh, I mean, throughout the whole thing. I mean, I went back and forth with them for months and months preparing for this deal. And I had an intro and kind of went over their backstory on how they met, and I had a leather-bound binder I was holding with all my notes and everything.
Did you wear your game jersey?
Oh, no, I had my nice, man, I got all nicely suited, tie clip, wore some nice Vans with the suit, low-top black Vans with the suit, real like L.A.-ish. You would have loved it.
Oh, yeah, I'm very L.A. hip.
It was a great experience, man. I want to do more.
All right, listen, we'll see if we can line up your next couple out here in fancy Los Angeles. That would be awesome for Hawk to do it. Hey, what teammates do you talk to in the off season? Do you pick up the phone and say, hey, Aaron Rodgers, what's going down, man?
Well, I don't know if anyone actually picks up the phone and talks anymore. I think we I text with a good amount of my guys. But, yeah, I mean, I see Aaron. He came to Ohio for a couple of days and stayed with us after the season for a little bit and hung out.
Oh, really? He hangs out with you? I don't know. I think we all imagine. I think 11-year-olds think that the team just is all pals and hanging around. But I've sort of gotten jaded and assume you guys just all go your separate ways. See you in September. Or, I mean, see you in August for the training camp.
Well, you know, Aaron's in a different stage of his life than me. He's pretty fluid. He can kind of go in and out. If you've looked around, you know, you see him at these basketball games, mm-hmm. in the locker room with Wisconsin. After he left Ohio back in January, he went out to Kansas and went to a practice and then went to one of their games. He's a big college basketball fan, so he didn't have any kids or anything, so he's just out in San Diego. So he kind of makes his rounds after the season and traveling around and seeing what he wants to do. So he wanted to check out the great state of Ohio, so we hosted him for 3 or 4 days.
Hey, Hawk, just to let you know, our pal Rank is out today. In his stead is another pal, Elliot here, E.H. He's a big Cowboys fan. Say hello, E.H.
Well, I wanted to. I just noticed something that A.J. said. You know, he said nobody calls anymore. I thought texting was something that was predominantly like for 23, 24-year-olds. If I'm not mistaken, in January, A.J. turned 30.
You know it. I know.
And you're texting. Let me guess, you Instagram too, don't you?
I do not.
There you take selfies.
One, I guess, that has a lot of followers. Maybe I should take that guy that took my name on Instagram. But no, I do not Instagram. I do not. I'm not real big. I'm not real good at the social media world. I wish I was. Damashek is. I just sit there and read Damashek's Twitter, and it just kills me. I love it. There's always like a Pittsburgh back theme to everything, and it's really sarcastic. It's just amazing. Damashek's a genius.
Oh, Hawk. It's too much. Let's talk about, though, your newest teammate. What do you think about Julius Peppers? Were you jazzed by this?
Of course. What's really funny is the week of the Super Bowl, I was in New York doing some things, just going around doing the whole media deal, and I did this Google Hangout thing, and someone asked me, like, who a player would be. They asked me on this recorded, too, because someone sent me the link. They asked me, I think if there's a player in the league that I haven't played with that I would like to or whatever. And I honestly, I said Julius Peppers, and they're like, oh, really? Why? He's a Chicago Bear, big rival. And I was like, I don't know. I was like, that dude just intrigued me. He's such a monster, and he's so big. I was like, what a physical specimen he is. And he played basketball at North Carolina. So that's pretty amazing when you look at it. So, and then about a month later, boom, Packers signed him. So I'm really excited. I mean, a guy like him just, he's been such a force in this league for so long. I think it's going to be a lot of fun playing with him. And
yeah, he doesn't have to play every down or anything for you guys either.
No, and he can, believe me, a guy like that, I think he can kind of do what he wants. I think everyone is probably going to be scared of him. But just his physical presence. But I joked about it over the last couple of weeks. I was like, either way, we're going to look a lot better getting off the bus. We're going to send him out first to try to intimidate the team because that dude gives us a physical presence instantly from the day he straps the old green and gold on.
Hey, Hawk, can I tell you something? This is pretty exciting news. In fact, we have our producer behind the glass is in black tie. We have a newcomer. Have you ever been behind the glass there, producer?
Have I been behind the glass? Absolutely. It's called the College Football 24/7
no,
podcast.
No, I mean on this show. We don't care about the other nonsense that they put out.
No,
we're talking about
no.
The only podcast that matters.
No, the only podcast that matters, no, this is my first time behind the glass.
And we're going to call you B-Tie?
Up to you. I think A.J. Hawk can create the name. He's busy
what
marrying
happened?
People.
What happened? What, is this your new full-time gig?
No. Black Tie goes on vacation for roughly 90% of the calendar year. So we always are having to have someone fill in for him. Either way... we had to figure out, what was I going to ask you about, though?
I don't know. What are you going to ask me?
Some kind of big news, you said.
Oh, yes. Get the drum roll ready. That's what I wanted to tell you.
Okay.
A.J. Hawk, I've mulled it over. I know the draft hasn't even happened yet, but I feel pretty, I mean, you know what? Listen, maybe it'll change, but I doubt it. I'm a man who stands by his own opinion.
Okay.
Are you ready for this? In 2014, after it's all said and done, 16 games, playoffs, everything else, the Super Bowl champion will be the Green Bay Packers.
Oh,
congratulations,
really?
Hawk. How's it feel?
Thank you. It feels great, Damashek, especially coming from a guy like you.
Yeah,
you
two rings.
You're a true expert, you know. And a lot of people call themselves experts, but you actually are. So that feels – I tell you what, I'm going to take this back to the guys in Green Bay. They're going to be excited.
I don't – you know, listen, I'm happy that I could be even a small part of things, and congratulations on your second ring now. And, you know, I'm not gonna pretend that I know who's going to win the Super Bowl MVP, but I hope it's you, Hawk.
Oh, I hope it is too, but – now, when I go online and I listen to your next episode, are you going to be picking, you know, are you going to have Carson Palmer on? Are you going to tell him that the Cardinals are going to be the champs?
Congratulations, DeAndre Hopkins. Your Texans are going to be the world champion. No, I wouldn't do that. I don't jive. You know that.
Okay.
I don't. Here's the thing, Hawk. I feel like, and because you know how I feel about jive talk, I don't engage in it. And for that reason, I pulled no punches with you and said, I feel like the Packers defense hasn't held up its end of the bargain. You know, for the most part, at least over the last couple of years.
I know. I agree with you.
I know you do.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I think the MVP is going to be TJ Lang.
Really? That's an outside the box choice.
I see TJ Lang.
Do you have some Detroit roots, PH?
No, I don't. I'm from Dallas, but I got to be honest with you. This last weekend, I went with my girlfriend to see a movie, and I really want to know if you saw it. See Noah?
I did not see Noah.
You didn't see Noah?
It just came out. You were in the theater first weekend for that?
I didn't realize it just came out. I just wondered if it motivated AJ to grow his hair back out because Russell Crowe's got the really bad long weave going.
No, not me. But what I did see, and I hope you guys have seen it, and Damashek, if you've seen this movie, I made this decision after my wife and I watched this together off a bootleg version on my buddy's iPad. If you do not like the movie Wolf of Wall Street, I don't want to be your friend, Damashek.
Wow, don't threaten me, Hawk, but fortunately, I did like it. I loved it, in fact.
Okay,
it was a lot of fun.
Well,
can I tell you that?
I'm sorry I threatened you there, but I was literally, like, hitting my wife, laughing, just crazy. That was just it was just amazing. Matt McConaughey's only in it like 7 minutes, and he has such an impact. He's so good in the beginning. So continue. I'm sorry for cutting you off.
No, you're exactly right. McConaughey's one scene, which apparently I've read, was completely improvised by him. He just walked in there and made that whole thing up, which is hysterical, the chest beating and everything else. Did you watch, though, Hawk, McConaughey in True Detective?
I have not. I'm sorry. I hear only great things. I saw McConaughey, Dallas Buyers Club, but
also
not
great.
Detective.
Oh man,
yeah,
you got to get
Dallas
caught up.
Club.
You'll love this True Detective. What about Game of Thrones? Are you ready for that? Or are you still behind the curve on that one too?
I'm telling you, I'm ready, but I just haven't pulled the trigger. It's like every time I get excited to watch these, and I know I need to start them. If they don't grab me from the first 10 seconds, I'm like a little kid with my attention span, and I just wander off, you know, and I leave the room. So Game of Thrones, I know, is just absolutely crazy. That's my first priority, I think
and that's I really feel like that is going to be up your alley. I really think,
but I understand where he's coming from. I mean, I was that way with Malcolm in the Middle. Like, I just waited on it and waited on it and waited on it.
Malcolm in the Middle.
The series was canceled and you're still waiting?
It was canceled after about 8 years. I just realized I never got around to it.
Hey, Hawk.
You know what's a sleeper, Damashek? A sleeper show that I think you would like?
Lay it on me.
Beep.
Oh, I hear good things. Yeah, I haven't checked that one out yet. Yeah, I gotta give that one a chance. Yeah, I'll do that on your recommendation. Yeah, I've heard it's very
really
funny.
Good.
What
really
about
good.
The big news is Letterman's hanging it up. What's your favorite? Are you a late night show guy?
Oh yeah, I'm a big fan of late night. You know, I'm a huge fan of stand up comedy. I know it's not stand up, but you know, they're
no, I know you are right. Who's your favorite late night show? All time.
I mean, honestly, all time. I watch old clips of Carson and those old school guys when they're sitting down there drinking and smoking cigs, and it just makes me jealous that I didn't live back then and I wasn't able to be a guest on shows like that. That stuff is amazing. So I liked Carson a lot. Obviously, I have a lot of respect for Jay Leno, but I think Jimmy Fallon has stepped in and just absolutely killed it. I think he is a monster, man. I turned on the other night, and all of a sudden, he's singing with Billy Joel, and it's like a real show, and Fallon was just amazing. So I think Fallon's going to take over the whole TV world right now.
It'll be interesting. Who would you like to, if you like stand-ups, and let's blend these two, who do you think should take over for Letterman?
Oh, is there any rumblings of who it might be? I mean,
I'm sure. Listen, believe me, they have a list. The CBS has a big list, I'm sure. People who float out Jon Stewart probably are ignoring that he makes $40 or $50 million a year annually. I mean, can you imagine? By the way, he makes 40 or 50.
That much, really?
He makes a fortune doing the Daily Show, so he's not probably realistic. Stephen Colbert, on the other hand, is probably an option. I don't know if he'll do. People will float out Chris Rock. I'm not positive that that's a great one to go with. Here's one for you. How about Joel McHale? I could see that working out.
Mark this in your podcast. Mark where you said that, because honestly, I think you're onto something. I think Joel would be great. You just mentioned all those guys before him. They would be fine, but they don't really create much buzz for me. When you said Joel McHale, that dude can do everything. He's already a host type guy, and he's an actor, and he's really funny. Man, Demishek, I think you might have hit it right there.
This is one of my many skills in life.
Votes for Wilford Brimley?
Wilford Brimley?
No votes for him?
I mean, I'd love to see that. Now, that's a TV show.
Wilford Brimley, the guy that sits on the horse and sells diabetes medicine?
Don't be an ageist.
Can I ask AJ one football question?
Go ahead. Your chance was when I anointed him 2014 Super Bowl champion.
I know, and I went with TJ Lang. But I'm curious. You know, Charles Woodson signed with the Raiders, you know, last year. And now James Jones goes to the Raiders. Are you guys sitting there scratching your head and going, really? The Raiders? That's where you want to play?
No, I mean, you can't really ever blame anybody because we don't know exactly what's happening in the whole free agent situation. But they got Reggie McKenzie. You know, Reggie came from Green Bay. We all know Reggie very well. And so you understand when you see something like that happen, just like John Schneider's in Seattle. So he's signed a few former Packers as well in the past couple of years. So that kind of happens a lot, man. I don't know. And the Raiders are going to try to make a push for it, I guess. So, and James is from California, so Charles is already there. So both of those guys, you can kind of see where they're coming from.
Yeah, but do you text them when they say stuff like, hey, I'm focused on making the Oakland Raiders a world champion? Do you text them and go, like, come on, man, you're not fooling anybody?
Yeah. I text them and I say, we're just going to take it one day at a time, one game at a time. You know, it is what it is. I just throw out every cliche.
There he goes. Hawk, that's one of his skills in life. When he has to, when he feels it's time to get political, if I start saying, oh, come on, Tony Romo and Peyton Manning are overrated. Oh, I don't know anything about that, Dave. I don't know what you're talking about. Hey, they're treasures. They're treasures, and they make our sport one of the great things that why people love it. So he just goes in. I'm not good at it. You see, I try to do it. I can't even do it. Hawk, real quick, let's talk about a couple things, and then it's time for you to go about your off season again. Real quick, when are you and the lady going to come out here already?
We're trying to find a time. We have to go to Arizona for a wedding here in a month or two. Unfortunately, I'm not officiating this one.
That's too bad. I was going to say, every weekend now is going to be consumed by Hawk weddings. Maybe you could do it at halftime of a Packers game. That would be really something.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do. I'll put some feelers out when I get back to Green Bay and see what they think about it. But we do. I mean, I want to come out there. I want to do your whatever your fake driving in a car TV show. What is that?
It's not fake. It's very real, sir. But what I really want isn't so much to talk with you. I want to talk with your lovely bride to find out what it's like to be married to an NFL football player. I want to do.
Obviously, she's just going to tell you how awesome it is, and every minute is just bliss, and give her everything she wants, you know. I'm a perfect man.
Wow, how beautiful. What a beautiful
I'm a little disappointed. How many times has AJ Hawk been on the show?
I don't know, 10 or 15?
10 or 15? You got Terrence Newman to do a Jerry Jones impression. Can AJ do one, too?
Do you do a Mike
Jerry
McCarthy?
Joe? Oh, gosh, well.
Or do any impression?
Man. I don't know how. I mean, I'm trying to think who I could.
He's a terrible singer, I'll tell you that. I found that out in Tahoe last summer. We have a video of us doing a little Michael Jackson song.
Me?
Yeah.
You're right. Well,
I carried the weight there.
I was too shy and insecure and terrible with myself to be able to step into it. You just snapped into that. You just snapped into that Michael Jackson like it was nothing. So
yeah, and trying to do "Careless Whisper" by Wham in front of a lot of people is tough.
Well, I told you, Damashek, I can't match your passion.
Nah.
You know, your passion and your enthusiasm is so over the top. That's what I'm trying to. I like to hang around guys like you. Hopefully, that rubs off on me. I'm a little more like monotone and just kind of steady. And you're just a roller coaster your whole life, just ups, super high ups and super low downs.
I'm super. I think you know me too well, Hawk. Apparently, yes, yes. I've really reached on more than one occasion the bottom of the human experience.
I'm joking, damn it, Shaq. You're doing great.
Hey, Hawk. So, speaking of songs, if you were a baseball player, you know how they do that now in every, I think in just about every ballpark, the guy gets to pick what his theme music is essentially when he gets into the at-bat box, in the batter's box. What would it be?
Walk-up music, I
guess.
I have thought about that in the past. Gosh. I'm a huge Dave Matthews fan. That's my guy. I've been like 40 shows. Mm-hmm. But it would either be Dave Matthews Band, Gray Street, because it's one of the, that thing gets going live, it's ridiculous. Or Lee Greenwood, God Bless the USA. I think I would probably go with that one.
No. I forbid that. That's ridiculous. You're not playing that.
We used to sing that when I was in first grade when it rained outside and we couldn't go outside for recess. And I used to cry every time as a first grader singing that. I was so proud of my country. I'm telling you, it sounds like I made it up. I'm not joking. Call my buddy, Johnny Thomas, kid I grew up with, one of my best friends growing
up. And I'm proud to be an American. That song, right?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. If your legs don't get weak and you don't start tearing up when that kicks in, then you're not an American.
I wouldn't be able to pitch to you if I were out on the hump because I'd be laughing too hard.
Exactly. I could just see Adrian Peterson standing there 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and AJ Hawk walks into the tackle box to Dave Matthews. He's really going to be quaking, man. He's going to be tweaking out.
You got to trust Adrian. You can't phase that guy. So maybe I just get him. He starts saying, "Yeah, this is good, man. I like Dave," and then give me a chance to tackle him because that guy is so big and powerful.
Yeah. Well, I've long said my cagey choice would be what's that guy's name who sings "You're Beautiful"? You're beautiful.
James Blunt.
Terrible.
What a beautiful song.
Oh, it's
I know, but imagine if I also then mouth the words at the pitcher, while I step into the batter's box, I give the ump, like, hold on a second, I got to dig in here, ump. And, like, I saw you with another man, and I start singing that at the pitcher while it's going on. That way, it's four-pitched balls. He doesn't want to mess with me. He's like, what's with this weirdo? I'm just, you know what, maybe I just get one in the bum. He beans me. I want this guy out of my hair, you know? That's not
the song I would have guessed for you.
I'm helping my team.
You do a little shimmy. If you mouth the words to him from "You're Beautiful" by James Blunt, and then you do a little shimmy and wiggle your little butt, think of the ladies will go crazy. Think of the endorsements you'll get.
Fringe benefit. You're right. That is a great idea.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, listen. AJ Hawk, you're beautiful. And we want you to come out to L.A. so that we can kibitz with you in person. Maybe we'll drive around. Maybe we'll do all that. Which is the team? Which are you, Red Legs or Tribe?
Oh, Reds all the way.
I thought that's what you told me.
I was a diehard Reds fan. Pete Rose is basically like – Pete Rose is the top of the mountain for me when it comes to heroes growing up. I love that guy. I still love him. I've been trying to get in contact with Pete Rose forever. I love him.
Text him.
I should.
Instagram him.
I know he's out in Vegas. Damashek, you know what I have? I'm not trying to shamelessly plug anything, but I'm trying to actually recruit you. I have recently started my own little podcast /interview/ I don't know what it is thing over Skype, and it's about to go live here shortly, and I'd like to have you on as a guest.
Holy hell, you know I'm in on that, Hawk, whenever you need me, fella.
Okay, good. I'm gonna text you. We're about to go live. I've recorded like 5 or 6 of them already, but we're about to get the site ready, my buddy who's running the technical side. And the first one with another Pittsburgh native, Brett Michaels, will be up shortly.
Holy hell. All right. Well, see, you'll tweet that, and then I'll retweet it, and that's the way these things go.
Okay, yeah, man, for real. I need to have you on because it isn't just hang out like casual deals that have gone like 45 minutes to about an hour and 15 in between that range and talking from people from all different walks of life. And Brett was my first one, and he was nice enough and a great dude. So if I had Damashek on, I get that whole Pittsburgh connection.
Yeah, and if CC DeVille was from Pittsburgh, that would be awesome.
Ooh, yeah, you're right. You're right. CC and Brett have had a few on stage issues. I know Brett talked about that a little bit. On it's called the Hawk Cast. Damashek, just for you.
Perfect. Listen, I love it, and so best wishes with that. Good luck to your Red Legs. I hope for your Buckeyes' sake that Aaron Rodgers' Wisconsin Badgers lose this weekend. I hope everything continues to turn up Hawk here, and we'll look forward to seeing you out here soon. Yeah, anytime for the podcast, obviously. We'd love to be a part of that.
Oh, yeah, man, I'll let you know. I'm going to send you an email for real. It'll be fun. It's on the internet. It's all my own thing, so you can say whatever you want.
You know what's awesome, too, is that, well, the next time you're out here, too, Elliot here mentioned having a girlfriend. I think AJ Hawk is ready to, you know, make it official for the two of you, you know?
That's a great idea. And, you know, I would like to throw in, first of all, it's great to meet you, but if you get a chance, try to catch Malcolm in the Middle. I hear it's a really a great little show, great little program.
Malcolm in the Middle,
You turned your back on it. Now you're trying to push it on the Hawk. I don't understand what games you're playing here.
It's all on Netflix, man.
Just watch Game of Thrones. Would you already? Enough with the nonsense. It's a great show. You're going to love it when you see it.
I know. I need to. That's all I hear about. The Bannisters or whatever. Lannisters. That's right. Lannisters.
That's right. Go on. I don't know. Now we'll let Hawk go. He's got to go listen to Lee Greenwood. This is a walk-up song. That's ridiculous.
I'm telling you, listen to it. Turn it on or have your guy play it on when you're getting off of the podcast, like, or your intro music. You'll be choked up the first 2 minutes of your show.
So would Matt Forte. He would be really choked up. I don't think he could face you.
No, you're thinking of Sean Moreno, the guy who had the big who cried in the pregame. Is that what you're thinking of?
You gotta love it, man. You gotta love it. He loves the USA. My daughter breaks down the USA chant at any time, and I just I pump it up and let her go with it.
All right, Hawk, listen, give our best, because I'm telling you that Packers defense is the underwritten story of the offseason. They're rising up. I like that you kept the young DB. I like that you bring in Peppers. I like you keep Raji. And the linchpin of it all, the man in the middle, 50.
Jared Boykin.
No, 50 we're looking at. We're talking about 50. He's the anchor.
He's having a big year. You're right, EH. You're right.
He probably is lined up for a big year. All right, listen. Okay, Hawk. So we'll kibitz soon. In the meantime, as always, what a delight.
Yes, thank you for having me on. It was an honor as always. Black tie, know I'm upset that I missed him.
Hey, see you, man. I'm gonna Instagram you and LinkedIn you.
Oh, both of them. Get me on MySpace too.
You bet.
There he goes, everybody. The reigning Shecky Award winner for our favorite football playing guest, and I hope you now know why, EH.
He's awesome.
He's delightful, isn't he?
He's awesome. You know, I was just thinking about, you know, he's played a lot longer.
Although he goes
down
a couple of notches in my book for the Lee Greenwood Jazz.
Nah, but, you know, you
just proud to be an American in the batter's box.
I think that's fantastic.
Where at least I know I'm free.
That wasn't bad, although you sounded a little bit like James Ingram with a really bad Pittsburgh accent.
What did you think about
that? What song pump you up? Proud to be American. I know it's a proud American song, but in what world does that pump you up?
Same people that thought Little Pink Houses by John Mellencamp was like the song of the 80s, those people.
Well, of course, that song is satirical. You know, it's not intended to be a pro-USA song.
Kind of like Born in the USA?
Yeah, right. And
I actually think Born in the USA is a good song. If you actually listen to the words, it's got a hook to it.
That could work.
What should we call Todd? That would be a terrible song too. What is Batter's Box?
No, I mean I could see the drum and that. I mean not the drum, the guitar. That could be helpful.
I've been around
that stuff for 3 years now, and it's normal like the.
Oh
country
yeah, you
songs.
Do play by play stuff, right?
Yeah.
For whom?
The Angels minor league teams the last couple of years.
Rancho Cucamonga?
They're Inland Empire now. But no, the year before this summer, I was in Burlington, Iowa. And then for two summers, I was in Orem, Utah with the rookie level team.
What's that like?
It's interesting. Teaches you a whole lot about different areas you never expect to go to.
Well, I don't see. Now you just sound like you're you know, trying to...
What are you trying to figure out?
I don't know. Is it creepy? Do you feel like,
no.
What kind of life have I chosen for myself sitting in this
no,
place?
No, that is not a life you want to go. Is being in a 10-hour bus ride to Helena, Montana, when guys are sleeping on the floor and you got to go to the bathroom, so you're climbing over the chairs and stepping on people, waking them up.
How much is it like, does it mirror in many ways Bull Durham?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
That's pretty accurate?
Yeah. All that kind of stuff... The weird thing is, like, for me, the press boxes, some are really nice, and then some, you're stuck, it's 105 degrees, no AC, and you got nothing. You're dialing to your radio station, it's hanging up because the phone line's a piece of garbage. Minor league baseball, baby.
Maybe we'll call him Minor Tie. Is that the producer has to have a tie in his name. What should we call it? No Tie. Maybe No Tie, because he's doing... Because he's doing baseball, but it's minor league, so he doesn't have to wear a tie.
That's true. Collared shirt and shorts. That was my attire.
Well, he's talking about minor leagues. Is my tie taken?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, my tie. Yeah,
I like that one a little bit.
Well, we do. Yeah, Chris Law, in fact, the usual producer of the Rich Eisen podcast, is my tie because he's been known to enjoy a drink. Or many
really?
Drinks. Yes.
I don't want to be associated with Chris Law, though, so let's figure out a new one.
All right, we'll work on that. All right, we're seeing if Nate Newton's going to show up here.
He's coming.
Oh, he is coming up.
Yeah, he's coming.
Oh, terrific. Meantime, let's get back to where we barely started the kibitz here before A.J. Hawk called in, E.H., and that's about your greatest dynasty of the Super Bowl era. I've weighed in myself on Total Access over the last month or so, trying to provide the pros and cons. Let's talk about what those are. Again, I'm not going to go over the reasons why. I just don't think anybody care, or the vast majority of football fans in 2014 were around or still around or care about what happened in 1955. So I don't really care about Otto Graham's All-American titles. Not to say that they're not relevant, but they don't exactly rise to the level of the Super Bowl. And the practical reason for that is when people poo-poo that, how dare you dismiss that stuff? Well, practically, there were only 12 teams or so in those leagues. You know, it's a different standard.
So how do you feel about the Packers?
Well, the Packers, right, through the 60s, when you hold them up as the titan of that dynasty, keep in mind, lots of great football players weren't even playing in the NFL. They were over in the AFL. So that's one strike against them. It's almost like talking
about... But they blew out the two AFL opponents that they played. You have to give them that.
They
blew them out.
I give them points, and that is the thing of the Packers dynasty. The greatness of the Packers dynasty is that, for the most part, they laid waste. They didn't just win consistently, but they whipped teams in the postseason. And one of the few exceptions to that is against the Dallas Cowboys in back-to-back years in 65 and 66, 66, 67. Other than that, though, they usually pasted who they were playing. So that is in their favor. The thing that the Packers of the 60s and the Steelers of the 70s have in common, when you evaluate what makes the greatest dynasty of these dynasties, and the five are, by the way, I skipped over that, you know, are the 60s Packers, 70s Steelers, 80s Niners, 90s Cowboys, and the early 21st century Patriots. And so it's really on some level apples and oranges, because the Packers and the Steelers, if you drafted well and you were lucky enough not to have career-ending injuries to key guys, then that was your team, and you were going to have that team against the teams that didn't draft well for the next decade. So
the front office held all the cards.
Right. So if you did a good job at putting the team together, you were probably going to be in good shape for the long haul. Now, that is something not to poo-poo. That's something to praise, of course. But it is, like you say, it has a lot to do with decision-making in the front office early on in the dynasty. Then there's credit to be given for the Patriots, because they've been chameleons, not just in the way they approach each game and each opponent, but, of course, they've had to remake their roster many times over. And to some degree, even, it's interesting, the Cowboys of the 90s had that foundation, and there was a core there that reeled off those Super Bowls. But, you know, the Niners and the Patriots are really marked by one coach and one quarterback, and then a lot of moving parts around them, so it's different. But speaking of guys on those Cowboys teams, EH, this is especially exciting for you because walking into Studio 66 right now, one of those aforementioned linchpins to success, a man who played guard six Pro Bowls, I just found out.
Yes.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah.
Here he is, everybody. It's Nate Newton. How are you, sir?
All right, sir. How you doing?
I'm good, but he's even better. Elliot Harrison, he's a Dallas Cowboys loyalist.
I'm
he
from
loves
Farmers
you.
Branch.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't. That's right next to Valley Ranch.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Yeah.
I was just trying to tell Dave, we were talking about the guard position, and, you know, it's not always the most glamorous position, but John Madden.
Why is it not?
Well, when is it ever glamorous?
I'll let Dave answer that.
It's always been glamorous to me.
Oh, it is. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Just to be a professional football player, no matter what position, even the low-life punters and kickers, you are special because you're at the top of the class. I mean, people do know who their guards are. I mean, now, they may not be a nationally thing, but it's locally, people know they players.
Well, how much of that, because I said at the start of the show, I feel like John Madden really made you into this superstar guy, even among these you know, Emmitt Smith, Troy Aikman,
yes.
Michael Irvin,
yes.
Deion Sanders for a while. There are a lot of big personalities
yeah.
there. And yet you always stood out, and I sort of, in my brain at least, feel like Madden really loved you, and he celebrated
yeah.
you every chance he could.
You know, I owe that to a couple of guys, man. Jim Erkenbeck, when he first got there, because Cowboys weren't known for big offensive linemen. They were,
line coach.
Yeah, yeah. So they was 6, you know, 6'6", 225, 240, 270. The biggest guy before I got there was Crawford Kerr. He was like 6'4".
Another guard.
Yeah, 295. So, and when I got there, you know, I'm 6'2", 6'2 and a quarter, 350 pounds. So that was a big difference. They didn't even have any shorts for me. You know, they had to sew a couple of pairs of shorts together just to get me in uniform. So, John Madden, and I'm going to tell you a quick story if you got time.
Please.
John, I was walking into, we was getting ready to play the New York Giants. And you know how we all get there early, you know, the players announce everybody. You walking through the tunnel. And I see John Madden. I'm just staring at him, man. Him and Pat Summerall. I'm just staring like, God, this is John Madden. You know, that's when I knew. I'm like, man, I'm in the NFL, man. And he said, hey, big fella, how you? I look at him. He's like, yeah, I know you are. You're Nate Newton, you know. He said, man, play well. He said, play hard. He said, I know you, man. I think you can play. Coach speak highly of you. And that was like my first year starting. And I'm like, man. And I get home, and the people on TV are like, man, Madden loves you. Man, you played good. Madden loves you. And from that point on, man, every time that bus pulled up to Valley Ranch, every time we were way on the road, I would make it my business to do a pregame interview with him. I mean, I wasn't on the list. I was nobody, man. I wasn't on the list. But I would, after everybody would meet with Madden, I would just wait hours, and I would go in and I would just sit down and I would talk to him and Pat Summerall. You know, and then all of a sudden it just got bigger. And next thing you know, I'm doing, you know, Capel Deli sandwich commercials and going up to the Super Bowl during the off weeks and stuff like that. Even when we wasn't in the Super Bowl, I was going up and visiting and just talking to John, man. And I owe a lot of my success to him. Yes, I do, because he would tell me, always have your Sundays, Nate. What do you mean, John? Well, always have something to do. Always have something to occupy your time.
Well, that's what I was telling Sheck, that I think the great takeaway from your career, there's a big misconception, I think, about the early 90s Cowboys, that Jimmy Johnson just appeared and all these guys got drafted and there was no one there. That's not true. There were some holdover players, 2A, Jeffcoat, Bates, Norton, really good players. Chad Hennings had gotten drafted but didn't come because of his Air Force commitment.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that that's the core, but Michael Irvin, that's a Tom Landry draft pick, not Jimmy Johnson. And I was telling Sheck that, to me, the great takeaway from your career that could inspire anybody is perseverance.
Yes.
You were cut by the Redskins. You joined the Cowboys when you were 25.
Now, wait. Before that, though, because I didn't remember, at least,
USFL.
That you were USFL.
Yep. Yes.
What
Steve
was that
Spurrier.
Like?
Man, that was the greatest, besides college, that was the greatest time of my life.
Your quarterback was, was John Reeves.
John Reeves.
I just saw when you said Spurrier, that rang the bell.
Yeah,
yep.
Man, right. We had everybody that was a who's who at the University of Florida in Florida State. Had Ron Simmons. I can't think of Walt last name.
You had Gary Anderson, the running back from Arkansas,
brother,
right?
Brother, and to this day, I've never seen nobody, one player, Deion Sanders, I think was faster than Gary Anderson. Hmm. I mean, this dude was lightning in a bottle, man. I remember Blue Bunny game,
yeah,
against Florida. They held him down to nothing. He came out after halftime, rushed over 125 yards. They took that game to Lou Holtz. That's when Lou Holtz moved on from there from Arkansas. Gary Anderson was the most complete back
ever played with. You and Sam Mills are two guys who went from the USFL.
Yeah,
to
Philadelphia.
Then,
he played for the Philadelphia Stars. Was
right.
It?
Yes. Yep. Yes. That's right.
Yeah. Bad little man.
I've talked about this a lot. Because, you know, listen, I'm growing up in the 80s watching USFL.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This is at that age where you're like, man, I don't care. I just love to watch football no matter what. I'll look at it summertime. So I fell in love with USFL football.
Right.
And, you know, people now, as they look back, they don't know anything about it. And they sort of think, like, well, it must have been like the XFL.
Reggie White came from there.
Yep.
Listen, there are a lot of guys.
Yeah.
That's right. Reggie White came from there. Doug Williams, Jim Kelly spent 3 years. Herschel Walker, that's the guy I want to talk about. Herschel Walker, to me, I think USFL was great. I think
Doug Flutie.
Right, that's right. You keep it. How about, you know, who's another great one who could have been a Hall of Famer? Here are three running
Jim
backs.
Jim Kelly.
That's right.
Yep.
You had Mike Rozier, Kelvin Bryant, and Joe Cribbs. All could have been in the Hall of Fame if they'd been in the NFL their entire career.
And there's all these other players that, okay, you guys are naming the stars, but how about Anthony Carter? Gary Clark.
Let me tell you
Irv
something.
Eatman,
let me tell you know? Something, brother. And I was going to bring up, that's my homeboy. He's from Florida, West Palm Beach.
Yep.
Let me tell you something, man. Bo Schembechler flew down and started throwing the ball because of this kid.
Hmm.
The Minnesota Vikings finally got him. Talking about, okay, he wasn't fast enough. Tell me, before he got there, who was the only guy you ever knew that could take a slant 60 yards? They'd be the slowest guy on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Carter, man. Go ahead on, man. Go ahead on. I'm sorry,
sir. No, you're right. I mean, Anthony Carter single-handedly destroyed maybe the best 49er team they ever had in 1987.
Yes, he did.
He went for 227 on, like, 10 catches, and exactly what you're talking about. And but, you know, there's so many good.
Bobby Hebert went from the USFL and then had a nice
career. He ain't stopped talking yet on the radio down there in New Orleans.
That is funny. Well, what I was saying to Sheck before you came on was that you really are a testament to perseverance. You made your first Pro Bowl at 31.
Yes, sir.
You made six Pro Bowls in your 30s. And I told Sheck, you were the offensive line version of John Riggins, who he was great in his 30s. You know, you just hit your second win. You won all three Super Bowls in your 30s.
Man, Riggo. I remember Riggo getting up, man. We was in a preseason game. And I think it was our second or third preseason game for the Redskins. And Coach Gibbs, great Christian man that he is, said, has anybody got something they want to say? You know, because we hadn't been playing well in the preseason. And, man, I hate to say this because Riggo, this may not sound good, but Riggo is one of the greatest running backs in it. Riggo was half lit up, man. He stood up. I just want to say, tomorrow we need to go out there for however long we end there. I mean, he was just toe up. You had to literally be there to see Riggo red-faced.
What a perfect combo.
And man, he did not – and I'm saying it nice because everything was M this, S that. Oh, man, that's what I remember of him,
Gibbs,
man.
Is super religious and right. His biggest offensive player is that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
and
great.
He went out and had a great quarter and a half, you know, and came to the bench. But you'd have never thought that this guy the night before – had a few. You know what I'm saying?
What about, so you see Herschel Walker, who again, like I say, man, 3 years. He had over 1,100 carries in 3 years in the USFL.
That's a workload.
18 game seasons.
Right.
2,400 yards 1 year.
Yeah. He had already had so much wear on the tire by the time he arrives in the NFL. I feel bad for him because I think he obviously had the skill to be a Hall of Famer.
He was a straight line runner. It was only a few teams in the league. Herschel was a throwback with speed.
Uh-huh.
Because me and him was together at the Cowboys. Herschel was a throwback with speed. He could have played in the 60s and 70s, and he'd have been the greatest thing, but the league was evolving.
He didn't have loose hips, as they say these
man,
days.
At all, brother, at all.
What about, Dorsett, Herschel, Emmitt Smith, rank them 1 through 3.
Oh, Tony Dorsett, number one.
That's right. You know, Gil Brandt says the same
Tony
thing.
Tony Dorsett, number one. Emmett, number two. Herschel, he, you know, I love him, and he's a great man. But you're talking about the ultimate backs. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about the ultimate backs. And I try to tell people, it's hard to rank backs because if you're going to talk about running backs, a running back is a guy you put the ball in his bread basket. Adrian Peterson is a running back. I ain't looking to throw him no flare outs. I mean, mm-hmm. he can do it. I ain't looking to run no screens. Emmett runs screens. You know, Barry Sanders runs screens. No, Barry Sanders is a running back. You hand him the ball. Yep. You give O.J. Simpson the ball. You give Marshall Faulk the ball anytime. You give what's my man works here with us.
Oh,
LaDainian Tomlinson.
LaDainian, you give him the ball. He don't never come off the field.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all-purpose backs. You know, Eric Dickerson, you put the ball in his bread basket, and he make things happen.
I got the difference. Yeah, I know what you mean by that. I want you to, before we jump in, because I want to get your thoughts on the 2014 mm-hmm. Cowboys and what's been going on with these 8-8 seasons. But real quick, I want you to admit something.
Lack of talent.
We'll get into that. I want to talk to you about this, though. I want you to admit something to the people out there.
What's that?
You had some rings. You had your fun with Jimmy Johnson and the gang and everything else. But I want you to admit, Super Bowl 30, you guys didn't deserve to win. The Pittsburgh Steelers.
I
don't like that you took
green,
that one.
Y'all had green. Y'all had green at one. Lloyd. Y'all had the big
Kirkland.
You were scared.
Homeboy from Florida A&M playing the other line, Holmes.
Greg Holmes. Oh,
man. You had a great safety.
Ernie Holmes, playing in the middle there.
Oh,
right.
Man. Y'all had a – used to play corner to Woodson and his safety. Yeah. Oh, man. Y'all had such great talent, but we were a better team.
No.
But
now, listen, we were going in the right direction. No,
you're right,
Earl
right.
Holmes,
y'all
not
going
Ernie
in the
Holmes,
right direction, but your quarterback just took a payoff, huh?
Now, listen.
He's not going
to
let this die. He's a huge Steeler fan.
I don't care if they're 20-year-old
the game
listeners
would play for five
out there.
Quarters, y'all would have won.
Well, that's exactly
right.
But let me tell you something.
Five quarters.
When you guys, I remember Troy Aikman hits Michael Irvin in the end zone for a touchdown.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Gets called back
because
he was doing some nonsense with pass interference.
Here we go.
It comes back because he was doing nonsense.
Right.
From that point on, tell me if I'm wrong about this. Be honest with me now. No jive. That's our rule here.
That's
at the
our
show.
Rule.
Now listen. From that moment on, the Pittsburgh Steelers defense shut you guys down way that nobody ever did before.
Year.
I'm talking about the
before
entire
and after. That's
the entire dynasty. Some teams would say, we're going to take away Emmett in the running game, and then Aikman would make him pay with the arm. Or we're going to take away the passing game, and we're going to grind you with Emmett.
Right.
But you know what the Steelers did? They said, we're not going to let you do either one from this point forward.
And y'all did not.
And then Neil O'Donnell did what he did, and that was nonsense.
And see, now since you had – and I agree with you, but you got to admit that on the other end, y'all – who was it? Was it Ernie Holmes caught the nice pass? Was it Ernie?
No. It was Ernie Mills.
Ernie Mills. Yeah. Caught the nice pass.
Played for the Cowboys.
Rolling and –
that's Andre Hastings who broke 78
man,
tackles
right.
on one play
Oh, man,
to get
y'all
a first
were
down.
Playing great.
Yes.
Let me say
but
this.
But the game is 60 minutes, not 50.
He won't let this die. I mean, he'll start going into Eric Pegram and a bunch of 95 Steelers.
But see, that's what's so great about this guy is that he knows everything But see, you probably haven't ironed that shirt since that game, right?
I don't need you to come in here and attack me. No fives. I don't want fives being given between you two at my expense. Not cool, Nate Newton. Not cool at all.
You know what? That 95 team, being in Dallas at that time, and I heard Troy say this, wasn't as good as the 94 team that lost. I think that, they talk about the salary cap. Obviously, you lost Stepnoski.
Yes.
But to me, there were two back injuries is what sent the Cowboys downhill. Jay Novacek and Charles Haley. If either one of those guys' bodies would have cooperated, I think you win again in 96.
Let me tell you something. And he said it all.
I usually do.
In the first few minutes of the show. I was 30. Tourne was 30. Gogan was coming up on 30. You're talking about three or four guys that were 32 plus years of age. Charles Haley was probably 31. None of us was young. And that was the key. Not that teams were better than us. Teams were younger and stronger, and we was playing what was between our ears. We was on our very, very last leg, brother. That's why Pittsburgh was able to do what they were able to do. It wasn't because if we would have been 2 years earlier, it wouldn't have even been a fight.
What about, and then this will be our last thing on that, but do you feel like if Switzer doesn't come in, or not even put it on Switzer, but if Jimmy Johnson doesn't leave, do you? Because I've talked to Michael Irvin about this, and he says we should have won four in a row. You agree
with
that?
Maybe not in a row. And see, this is what people don't want to admit, is maybe I wouldn't have been there for the last Super Bowl. Maybe because Jimmy was going to keep it young. He was going to keep young guys rolling through. He was going to keep young guys rolling through his defense.
And Philadelphia wanted you in free agency.
Yeah, they was making a great effort to try to get me. So, and that's what it was. We got old quick. I mean, we didn't gradually get old. It was bam. One day we woke up and all of us was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, you weren't 21 when Johnson walked in.
It wasn't the game that killed. It was the partying in Dallas that killed us.
You went to Iguana Mirage too much. That's
what you did. Oh, my God, man, and the things that we would do.
It was now, listen, I know it was fun. It was, I mean, fun. Like, could I not?
It was the next level.
Is it too much for me to, like, to fathom? If we sat here for 45 minutes, I said, just give me your five best stories about the debauchery. I wouldn't be able to fathom that other human beings get
this. Is this series ready? I mean, I ain't going to talk about the
competition. Yeah, we can't go R-rated, unfortunately. I'd love to hear it, though. Maybe when the show stops. But,
I know a few of these stories.
Yeah.
Real quick then, let's keep it G-rated, except for Cowboys fans. Tony Romo, do you like him? Can he win a Super Bowl? Because to talk about old, he's 34 now.
I like him. Do I love him? No, because Jerry would not allow you to love him because they have not given him the proper tools around him. So you can't – everything is blamed on the quarterback. Everything, whether you want to blame it on him or not. Everything is blamed on the quarterback. And I like Tony, but they would not allow you. And I don't like to bring up the owner's name because he was great to Nate. Mm-hmm. He was great to Nate. But you have to – Jason Witten is not enough. Tight ends don't win Super Bowls. Tight end allows you to get the Super Bowls. You need great outside receivers. Dez is just coming into his own. We got a young kid from Baylor, you know, who's shown some promise. We've gotten rid of Miles Austin, so we need a third receiver. Our running back, good as he is, has not been healthy. Last year he played the most games, I think 12. Mm-hmm. Middle linebacker, LeSean. Sean Lee. As good as he is, can't stay healthy, haven't given us 15 games. Let me say this, and you can do the numbers. You can be hurt early, but you can't be hurt late. You have to give at least anywhere from 13 to 14 games. You have to give your team as a starter. You can miss two or three games. You can't miss them at the end of the year. That's the Cowboys. Check them out. Mm-hmm. Everybody's hurt at the beginning of the year. Get healthy and make a run. Cowboys be healthy at the beginning of the year. At the end of the year, they lose everything.
That's right.
You can't do it like that. You can't win.
All right. Well, listen, don't be surprised if they continue to have bad health if Nate Newton doesn't take over one of the guard spots in 2014. Do it. It'd be cool to see.
I got one play.
What is
it? And that's towards the end of the bench, baby, because I ain't got no more left.
All right. Then if we get into one of these debaucherous parties, then at least I want to be there for that.
Okay. Yeah, I invite you, man. You got to change shirts, though.
Well, I mean, again, with the shirt, so what?
It is a little bit. I mean, it looks like wash, but.
You got a shirt for radio, because we had that on TV, we'll all be off there.
All right. Listen, you've proven to be every bit the delight that John Madden told me you were.
Right.
And everybody, you've been here on NFL Network Total Access all week long talking about the great Dallas Cowboys teams that you were a part of in the 90s. And those people all said, boy, this Nate Newton's terrific. You got to kibitz with him on the podcast. And I'm glad we did. What a pleasure to meet you. If only you would admit that Super Bowl 30 should have gone the other way. Then it would really be perfect.
Update your room, man. You got old guys.
I know. We're going to put a Tom Rafferty picture up here.
No, that's right. You got to get up
there. Maybe we have to put a Nate Newton up here. That'd be
great.
Thank you all for having me.
All right, there he goes. The great Nate Newton. Thanks, and what a pleasure to meet you. I want to hear more about those stories. That's what we got to do is hear more
about
Nate's.
Trust me, you do.
But won't they make me sad for my life? But I didn't get to have those stories, so then I'll be sad I didn't get to experience them myself.
Well, I tell you what, man, Dallas in the mid-90s was it was ridiculous.
It sounds like New York Mets of the 80s. The Steelers of the 70s, there's some pretty good tales about them.
I'm just telling you that the city, the economy was recovering. There were so many bars and clubs that are springing up. I was becoming of age at that time. And, you know, we're talking about dynasties, Dave, and there's always something that, you know, with the Steelers, 1980, when they were trying to do it, they had so many injuries that they ran into. And a lot of what Nate's talking about, you know, that all those guys were getting to be, you know, 30-something years old. Well, one of the injuries that killed the Cowboys was a young guy, Eric Williams, getting in a car accident because he was the dominant offensive lineman in pro football. If Eric Williams hadn't gotten hurt, and everyone agrees about this from Dallas players, media, it wouldn't be Larry Allen that everyone's talking about. It'd be Eric Williams. But he hurt his knee after a night out, and that really, really hurt them.
I hear you, but I stand by what I said. From a distance, I can say this. Listen, if Jimmy Johnson just stays there, they win. I don't think you.
It's possible.
That's the fun, the compelling aspect.
The NFL.
As we go back when we look at these five dynasties, you can find the chink in the armor everywhere there. About like there's a spot where you can say right exactly. There's a flash point for each of these dynasties where you say here's how it could have been a little bit longer and here's how it could have been worse. You could do that on both sides. Neil O'Donnell doesn't throw those terrible picks. The Cowboys only have two Super Bowls. Conversely, Jimmy Johnson never leaves. The Cowboys are the greatest dynasty ever, the 90s Cowboys, because they probably win 4 out of 5, and that would be, you know, that would be unprecedented. So
for
they're
sure.
The best. On the other hand, you go to the 80s Niners. Maybe if Bill Walsh sticks around there. Maybe if Montana doesn't hurt his elbow against the Giants in the 89 playoff game and miss two seasons. Maybe they don't decide, let's go full on to Steve Young. If they stick with Joe Montana when he comes back, maybe they win a couple extra Super Bowls there.
Roger Craig doesn't fumble in that 1990 championship.
Pittsburgh of the 70s, of course, everybody will hold up. 1976 is their best team or their best defense at least. But, of course, Rocky Blyer and Franco Harris are hurt for the game against the Raiders, and so they lose that game, and the Raiders win Super Bowl 12. The Steelers win that. If they have 5 out of 6, then, of course, they're the best team of all time. And I'll just say this. The Patriots are admirable because of their ability to constantly move on. That's a tough racket to...
You're talking about in the cap era?
Yes. In the cap era, it's tough for the Cowboys, but they had that core. But this Patriots dynasty is remarkable. I don't even know if it's an active one when you haven't won a Super Bowl in 9 years, but they're always playoff relevant at least, so it's impressive stuff. But again, it's primarily about Belichick and Brady. It's not about this team-wide... you know, stability. It's about those two guys and all the moving parts around it, which, again, is to be commended. On the other hand, Pittsburgh's is to be commended because they established that foundation and then rode that for the entire 70s. The reason I would say, and I'm a homer, absolutely, I concede that I'm a homer, and it's razor thin, the difference. But the reason I say the Steelers are the greatest dynasty of all time is because if you extend it beyond in just the Super Bowl era, if I say what are the greatest, give me the 10 greatest dynasties of the Super Bowl era, you're also going to include in that group the 70s Dolphins and the 70s Cowboys and maybe the 70s Raiders. I mean, that's the second five mm-hmm. there. The Steelers still were head and shoulders above those teams. So that's the reason. It's the competition. It was a top-heavy league at that point. There were 5 or 7 or 8 really good teams, and then the rest were dreck. And every January, the good teams would butt heads with each other. And more often than not, the Steelers finished it standing atop the mountain. The Niners had to go through some good
Giants teams
and some good
Bears teams.
Right.
You're making the Beatles argument.
But in the Super Bowl, the difference, too, is when the Niners would get to the Super Bowl, who was there waiting for them? The Bengals?
You're making the Beatles argument. They had the Stones and the Who to contend with, and yet they were still number one.
That's my argument.
I get it. So I'm just going to make a case for two dynasties. One, the Packers. I don't believe in blaming a team for playing who's on their schedule and whipping them. You know, Green Bay played who was on their schedule, and they went 9-1 in the playoffs. You know, would Green Bay in their prime have beaten Pittsburgh in their prime? I think they could have, because they would have beaten Pittsburgh at their own game in a lot of ways. Now, does that mean that they were better? I don't know. I would take the 62 Packers over any team in NFL history, period. For the 90s Cowboys, I'll make this case. The Patriots get a lot of credit for solving the salary cap issues. But you know what? When the Patriots went on that little run where they won 3 out of 4, the salary cap had been around for 8 years. Now you have capologists, and you have guys, assistant GMs, who their job is to determine what the financial future is of the team and make decisions. When the Cowboys got hit by the cap, nobody knew how to deal with the salary cap. Nobody knew what was going to happen. That Cowboys team got absolutely cannibalized. I'll go with one of the pit guys, to Lou Stepnoski. Huge, huge loss at center. You know, I mean, the Cowboys team just kept losing player after player after player, and I just don't think they were as equipped to deal with it the way the Patriots, because they didn't have the study time. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. So your final rankings go 60s Packers.
1. Pitt 7. I took 70 Steelers 2 because, to me, the very definition, we talked about this before we went on the air, it depends on how you define a dynasty. And to me, it's taking the same nucleus of guys, building it through the draft, and winning as much, squeezing it dry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who did that better than the 70 Steelers? 22 guys we came up with that played in all 4 Super Bowls. They were number 2. I took Dallas number 3. Dallas really had 2 dynasties. They played in 5 Super Bowls, had 20 straight winning seasons. Then they came back in the 90s. I have the 49ers at 4.
The Niners went like 20 years or 18 years or something and had 1 losing season.
That's true. Dallas went 20.
Hmm.
And the other thing, the problem with the Niners, and look, we are splitting hairs here. It's hard to disparage any of these teams. But the year after they won the Super Bowl in 16, I think there's been a little bit of revisionist history. It's like they went on this dominant run. False. The next year was a strike. They went 3-6.
Yeah, but that is their one bad year. They don't just go have winning records. They have double-digit wins, I think, in like something like 16 or 18 straight years.
True.
Again, it has less to do, though, with top-to-bottom quality. It has to do with Joe Montana's greatness and Bill Walsh, the innovator, and that's not discrediting either one of them, but I don't know if you call that a dynasty, because, you know, they start out with Wendell Tyler in the backfield,
mm-hmm.
or not even Wendell Tyler in 16, he wasn't in the backfield.
Oh, they had the worst group of backs in the history of the league.
Earl Cooper, right?
As far as winning
Earl
Super
Cooper, I believe,
Cooper,
is their starting
Ricky
running
Patton.
Back. Yeah, bums.
Not exactly. I think Linville Elliott. Those were their backs.
Yeah. So anyway, I go Steelers. Big surprise that I would go with that one, but it's interesting stuff, and you can check it out at NFL.com, ranking those 5 dynasties, and really, like you say, splitting hairs with all of them once you start debating them, because you really can find a play or two or a decision or two that could make it. They absolutely could have won 2 or 3 more each in each case, or they could have absolutely lost 1 or 2 more, and not really. They could have been more of a footnote in this conversation.
Right, and the Cowboys and Patriots are still the only teams to win 3 out of 4, and that's a heck of a run.
The best team, real quick, and then we'll wrap it up here, this is a conversation for another time probably, but let's just start it real here with a quick answer. I say the greatest team to never win a Super Bowl, it's amazing that it's not – that I'm not going to say the Buffalo Bills here, but they're a great answer. The early 90s Bills with Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and that great group. Maybe that is the correct answer. Maybe I'm making it more difficult than I need to, because you could also go with the Vikings. They play in those 3 and a couple moving parts, but Fran Tarkenton's Vikings, let's say, and that great defensive front. I love those San Diego – I don't love them, but those San Diego Chargers. I was never a fan of theirs, but I retract the I love them, but I think that team, they were snake bitten, man. They had it rough. Late 70s, early 80s, they were dominant. You know, they were one of those offenses, sort of the way people talk and swoon over Peyton Manning and the 2013 Broncos. If you accept that there are rules changes that have made the numbers exponentially greater than what Dan Fouts put up, that's what that was. They were just an unstoppable offensive group, and I can't believe that they never even played in the Super Bowl, let alone won one. They didn't even get to one.
Right. For me, the best team that I've seen in my lifetime did not win a Super Bowl. Well, they won the year before, but the 83 Redskins getting beat by the Raiders like they did, that 83 Redskins team was amazing. But if you're going to take a whole era of a team, like you're taking the early 80s Chargers.
Yeah.
If you're just going straight talent, looking at the roster, the late 80s, early 90s Oilers, I mean, they were loaded. They were loaded with talent. How that team never was able to put it together. If I just started rolling off the names, You know, it's amazing to think about.
Well, they're two best. They got knocked down by the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was within their own division. The Steelers had to overcome that team before they even moved on to play the Raiders and the Broncos and then the Cowboys in these Super Bowls against the Dolphins, these titanic teams. All right, listen, EH, exceptional stuff as always. I feel like this was a good podcast. Give it a grade behind the glass there, what, Ty?
I was impressed. I liked the chat with Hawk. I thought that was great. Love the passion from Newton. I got to give it a chance to get even better. So what, A-, B+?
I see. All right.
Does that work?
B+.
Go ride a bus, why don't you? You creep.
Done enough of that.
So that's done for you? That's in the rearview mirror? No more bus riding?
Oh, no, it's possible. It could be in the future.
Can we call him Negative Nancy Ty?
Negative Nancy Ty. It's
clunky, but let's do it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, sour
I don't tie. Like yeah. that, Elliot. Not at all.
All right, listen. Thanks to whatever we're calling him behind the glass, Ty, and to EH and to Nate Newton and to AJ Hawk. I guess I'll be making an appearance on his new podcast at some point soon.
That's
looking
cool.
forward to that. Be on the lookout because early next week, there's a lot of good stuff coming up there. I had conversations with a bunch of NFL guys asking them very important questions. I talked to some really good guys, Colin Kaepernick, Adrian Peterson, Patrick Peterson, Alfred Morris, a rainbow of stars. And we had a good time kibitzing with a whole bunch of these guys. That's going to be up at NFL.com for you very soon, as is EH and I and our pal Daniel Jeremiah. We're doing something very fun with the draft that I think will be up early next week, so be on the lookout for that as well, plus some other foolish videos, and like I say, at NFL.com. Currently, Elliot Harrison's work is there on these dynasties, so be on the lookout for all that stuff, and we'll be back next week with more Huey and Applesauce. Enjoy the Final Four, enjoy your baseball, and enjoy the never-ending excitement that is pro football. We'll be back with more Huey and Applesauce later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.